The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include, in North Carolina, Harris pitches good jobs tied to Biden infrastructure plan, and stocks close lower, pulling indexes below record highs. And we'll begin with, in North Carolina, Harris pitches good jobs. Vice President Kamala Harris was in North Carolina for the first time since taking office, visiting the Greensboro and High Point area to push the Biden administration's infrastructure plan. Harris traveled to Guilford Technical Community College in Jamestown to speak about the American Jobs Plan, then to High Point for a tour of Thomas Built Buses, a manufacturer of electric school buses. The jobs plan would spend trillions of federal dollars on physical infrastructure to fix bridges and expand transportation, plus more funding for home health care workers. It would also expand broadband internet, an issue that has gotten increased attention in North Carolina after a year of mostly remote learning until students went back to in-school person school this spring. Harris said the plan will create millions of jobs. It's about good jobs for every worker, good jobs for every worker everywhere, Harris said. The truth is, a lot of jobs out there require some education after high school, she said, whether training, certification, or a college degree. We can't just talk about higher education without thinking about what kind of training Americans need simply to get hired, she said. Harris said those good jobs will also be for women. Hard hats are actually unisex, she said. Harris also talked about the plan for those jobs to be union jobs. I believe every worker in America deserves the ability to join and organize a union. North Carolina has the second lowest union membership rate in the country. North Carolina is second only to South Carolina. In 2020, the nationwide union membership rate was 10.8%, which increased 0.5% over the previous year. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, North Carolina is 3.1%. Ahead of Harris's visit, leaders of the North Carolina League of Conservation Voters and North Carolina State AFL-CIO said in a statement, "The American Jobs Plan will allow us to finally address the intersecting health, economic, and climate crises we face." As we recover from COVID, now is the time for millions of people to get back to work with new high-quality union jobs in a clean energy economy. Conservation Voters Executive Director Kerry Clark and NCAFL-CIO President Mary B. McMillan said in a statement, Harris started her speech talking about the Biden-Harris administration's first 90 days. Help is here. Help is here. And hope is here. Things are looking up, she said. Harris's plane landed at 10:30 a.m. on a rainy day in Greensboro, where Governor Roy Cooper, U.S. Representative Kathy Manning, and Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Reagan greeted her. Cooper has been rumored as a possible running mate if Harris runs for president. He is in his second term as governor, and while he has said that he won't run for U.S. Senate in 2022, he hasn't ruled out other elected office. North Carolina's governors are limited to two consecutive terms. Cooper is also the vice chair of the Democratic Governors Association. As Harris began to talk at Guilford Tech, she called Cooper a longtime friend. Cooper introduced Reagan, touting his North Carolina roots and mentioning that he's a graduate of North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro. Reagan was previously North Carolina's environmental agency leader. Elected officials in the room as Harris spoke included State House Democratic leader Robert Reeves and U.S. Representative Alma Adams. Cooper, Reagan, U.S. Representative David Price of Chapel Hill, and plant leaders joined Harris on the tour, included the bus floor assembly area, automated vehicle guidance system, electric vehicle charging station, and the electric vehicles fleet. The jobs plan designates $20 billion for electric school buses. Harris called the electric buses a model for the world and a clear example of American aspiration to see what is possible and then do it. She said the $20 billion would be a significant step toward the goal of electrifying all school buses. She said the plant is an example of what happens when you put the resources into place for American ingenuity and innovation. Cooper called the buses the epitome of clean energy and said he's grateful for the proposed infrastructure legislation that could bring jobs for North Carolina and other states. Several Republicans responded to Harris's visit by saying she should be focusing instead on the U.S.-Mexico border crisis. Instead of working to solve the crisis at the southern border created by Biden's reckless policies, Vice President Harris is pitching a $1.8 trillion tax hike. Mike Whately, the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, said in a statement sent to the News and Observer by way of text message from an NCGOP spokesperson. We need an infrastructure package which is focused on strengthening Americans' infrastructure and will create jobs rather than kill them. Instead of being here selling failed policies, I would have thought Vice President Harris would be at the border where the real crisis is, said State Senator Phil Berger, an Eden Republican, in a statement to the NNO. Harris ended her triad visit with an unexpected stop at the International Civil Rights Center and Museum in downtown Greensboro, site of the Woolworth's sit-in of February 1, 1960, which led to a wave of sit-ins nationwide during the Civil Rights Movement. Harris sat briefly in a seat at the original lunch counter and talked with local officials in North Carolina, NAACP President Anthony Spearman. Harris was last in North Carolina in the fall during the presidential campaign, after she became President Joe Biden's running mate. During a late September visit, she spoke at Shaw University, an HBCU in Raleigh, and visited a black-owned barbershop and hair salon in Raleigh. Harris is the first woman vice president, as well as the first black vice president and the first of Indian descent. For more North Carolina government and politics news, listen to the Under the Dome Politics podcast from the News and Observer and the NC Insider. Next, stocks close lower, pulling indexes below record highs. Technology companies helped drag U.S. stocks broadly lower Monday, pulling the indices below the record highs they reached last week. The S&P 500 dropped 0.5%, shedding more than a third of its gain from last week. Tech stocks were the biggest weight on the market, but the losses were shared broadly by a mix of banks, energy companies, and others that rely on direct consumer spending. Chip maker Intel fell 1.7%, Capital One lost 0.9%, and Valero Energy slid 2.3%. Only real estate stocks eked out a gain. The pullback came as bond yields mostly moved higher after easing last week. Rising bond yields tend to make shares in technology companies that have had a strong run-up over the past year look too expensive. What we're seeing in the markets today is that bond yields, after falling last week, are back to rising again, and Megan Horniman, Director of Portfolio Strategy at Verdance Capital Advisors. And you can see that negative correlation between rising bond yields and declining prices in technology is still with us. The S&P 500 fell 22.21 points to 4,163.26. The benchmark index is coming off its fourth straight weekly gain. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 123.04 points, or 0.4%, to 34,077.63. Both the S&P 500 and Dow hit all-time highs on Friday. The tech-heavy NASDAQ composite slid 137.58 points, or 1%, to 13,914.77, while the Russell 2000 index of smaller companies fell more than the broader market, shedding 30.67 points, or 1.4%, to 2,232. Stocks have rallied in recent weeks amid a string of encouraging reports on hiring, consumer confidence, and spending that point to an accelerating U.S. economy. COVID-19 vaccinations and massive support from the U.S. government and Federal Reserve are fueling expectations for solid corporate profit growth as more businesses reopen after being forced to close or operate on a limited basis due to the pandemic. A good amount of investor attention is focused on the bond market, as government stimulus and the recovering economy have led to concerns about inflation. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.6% from 1.57% late Friday. Even so, company earnings are front and center this week as investors look to justify the recent rise in stock prices with the profits needed to keep the market fueled in this recovery. On average, analysts are expecting profits across the S&P 500 to be up 24% from a year earlier, according to FactSet. The busiest stretch for quarterly results begin this week, with 81 out of 500 members of the S&P 500 due to report results, as well as 10 out of 30 members of the Dow, including Johnson & Johnson, Verizon Communications, and Intel. Coca-Cola added 0.6% Monday after beating Wall Street's first quarter profit forecast and giving investors an encouraging update on improving sales. Harley-Davidson jumped 9.7% after handedly beating analyst profit forecast. Investors want to see validation of this very sharp positive economic momentum that is starting to get priced in, Sunitha Thomas, National Portfolio Advisor at Northern Trust Wealth Management. They want to see that earnings momentum is really there for the rest of the year. Outside of earnings, several stocks made big moves Monday. Tesla dropped 3.4% after two people were killed in Texas in a crash of one of its models. Authorities say there was no one in the driver's seat at the time of the crash. It is not clear whether the car's driver assist program was being used. Peloton slid 7.3% after regulators issued a safety notice over the exercise equipment company's new treadmill. The company hasn't been forced to recall the treadmill, and it's fighting the issue. Altria Group slumped 6.2% following a published report that the Biden administration is considering requiring tobacco companies to reduce the nicotine level of cigarettes sold in the U.S. Next, vaccine-fueled shortage drives up prices of rental cars. It's not only tourists finding themselves out of luck amid a shortage of rental cars in vacation hotspots like Florida, Arizona, Nevada, and Hawaii. When builder Ricky Ringer needed to rent a car to haul some building materials to his job site a few weeks ago, he was stunned to find nothing available at rental car agencies. Not in Okeechobee, where he lives, not in Palm Beach County, not in Orlando. Nobody had one from Jacksonville to Fort Lauderdale, the Davie native said. At the Enterprise rent-a-car office nearest him in Okeechobee, he spotted six cars in a back parking lot. They said they hadn't been cleaned and needed oil changes. I offered to drive one up to the oil change myself. In the midst of our vaccine-fueled reemergence into normal life, stir-crazy consumers are finding one element of the mobility we took for granted in pre-pandemic times, a wide range of rental cars available for affordable rates that won't be recovering anytime soon. What that means for South Florida residents with their own cars and an extra bedroom, your house guest might be asking for your keys. Demand for rental cars in Florida surged in the weeks between President's Day weekend and mid-February through Easter weekend in early April. Analysts blame a unique confluence of factors. Rental car agencies sold off 30% to 40% of their fleets when demand plummeted last spring. No one anticipated how many tourists would flee lockdown northern cities for hotspots this spring. Meanwhile, a semiconductor shortage has stalled new car production at Ford and GM, raising prices and preventing rental companies from rebuilding their inventories prior to the current boom. Jonathan Weinberg, CEO of rental car aggregation website Autoslash.com, said he was stunned on President's Day weekend to discover that rental vehicles were sold out at 18 of 20 Florida airports. The situation worsened as spring break beckoned cooped up northerners to Florida in droves, triggering a run on rentals not only at airport locations but in-town agencies as well. When vehicles were available, they were going for as much as $500 a day, Weinberg said. While inventories have returned to South Florida rental agencies in the tourism lull between Easter and Memorial Day, rates are 2 to 3 times as high as a year ago. Weinberg expects the shortage and high prices to linger through the summer as northern tourism spots reopen and rental car companies shift their inventories north to meet the demand. Enterprise's website on Friday showed no cars available to rent for the weekend at Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. A search for last-minute weekend rentals on travel site Orbitz.com turned up just 15 results from Sixth Rent a Car, including a Volkswagen Jetta for $494 a day, a Toyota Tacoma pickup for $492 a day, and a full-size Chevy Tahoe SUV for $858 a day. What's really strange, Weinberg said, is that some airlines are offering one-way fares for as low as $50 or $60 to travelers who arrive at their destinations to find daily rental rates at 10 times the cost of their tickets. Tracy and Dwayne Borgman on vacation from Michigan are getting restless at a Westin resort after an airport rental agency failed to deliver the SUV they booked. Now we're on our third day without being able to go anywhere, Tracy Borgman said Thursday. So much for a very needed vacation. Travelers should anticipate strong car rental demand to last several months and book their cars as early as possible, said Lauren Lester, communications director for Hertz, which declared bankruptcy during the quarantine and sold off much of its fleet last year at bargain prices. We're seeing a surge in demand for leisure travel in vacation destinations, including Florida, across the car rental industry, Lester said by email. This is encouraging given where the industry was during this time a year ago, and we're happy to help travelers return to the road safely. She recommended that travelers check out rental car agencies located in neighborhoods if airport lots are sold out. But even that's no guarantee, as an Orbitz.com search on Friday for a last-minute weekend rental turned up no vehicles from well-known companies. A search for cars available to rent from neighborhood locations for the following weekend, however, turned up economy cars from Hertz for $78 a day, a mid-sized Toyota Corolla for $83 a day from Hertz, and a mid-sized pickup for $85 a day from Budget. With taxes and fees, consumers can expect to pay around $100 a day. That's a lot more than before the pandemic, but far less than $500. With increased demand driving up prices, independent entrepreneurs who make cars available through Turo, the so-called Airbnb of car rentals, are reaping benefits. Anthony Paulino of Orlando says demand is booming for use of the four vehicles he owns, two Chevy Equinox compact SUVs, a Chevy Corvette sports sedan, and a Mercedes C-Class sedan. His daily rates range from $45 for the Equinox models to $182 for the Corvette. Consumers book the cars through Turo's smartphone app, which directs them to their location in Orlando's airport terminals. Paulino says he's booking reservations through November from tourists and locals who all say the same thing. I found out about Turo because of the shortage and then finding out about the price difference. Here are tips for finding rental cars without overpaying. Plan ahead and make sure you can find a vehicle in your price range before booking your flight and hotel. Avoid prepaying because prices might drop before you travel, and many rental car agencies offer the ability to pay when you get the car. Don't limit your search to on-site agencies at airports. Rates can be significantly lower in surrounding areas, and the savings could be worth the price of a cab or a car share ride to get there. Don't be desperate enough to rent from a no-name rental car company that you've never heard of. Some of these companies will seem to offer great prices in search results, then load on hidden fees that exceed the come-on price. If you are tempted to rent from an unfamiliar company, check out its Better Business Bureau reviews first, and be sure to take a lot of photos of the vehicle before you drive it away. Some companies are notorious for blaming you for damage caused by previous renters. Next, Raleigh buys land for affordable housing along future bus line. Raleigh closed Thursday on a tract of land it hopes to preserve for affordable housing along one of the city's major thoroughfares. The city bought a portion of Duplex Village at 1920 New Bern Avenue, paying $3.7 million for nearly 4 acres along the future bus rapid transit route planned for New Bern Avenue. Because the New Bern Avenue corridor is largely fully developed, there are relatively few opportunities for significant affordable multifamily projects, according to a city news release. One of the few opportunity sites is a 9.46-acre low-density rental development known as Duplex Village, which is comprised of 66 duplex units built in 1949. Buying land along transit corridors was one of the goals of the city's $80 million affordable housing bond that voters approved in 2020. We want to make sure that we have opportunities for low and moderate income folk to be able to benefit from the bus rapid transit investment, said Larry Jarvis, director of Raleigh's Housing and Neighborhoods Department. So that's important we step up to the plate to do that. Raleigh agreed to purchase the eastern portion of the property, which has 24 duplex units. Austin-based Artesia Real Estate Investments will retain the western part of the property. Artesia and the city have discussed options for preserving long-term affordable housing opportunities on the site, while at the same time allowing market forces to respond to the BRT proximity, according to the news release. Half of the units in the eastern part of the property are vacant, and the city will work with current tenants in good standing to transition them into other housing options, according to the news release. Raleigh will initiate a rezoning for apartments and seek a developer to apply for low-income housing tax credits or to use money from the affordable housing bond for the project. Using the tax money mechanism, the desired objective is to create roughly twice the number of affordable units on the eastern tract that have historically existed on the eastern and western tracts combined, the news release said. The project site is next to a former church that nonprofit developer DHIC and the Presbyterian Homes, Inc. plan to turn into 150 apartments for low-income seniors. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.